So this is Alex Raffi. I'm using new equipment today. I'm in an actual podcast room, and this is my first time using it. And so my intention is to give birth again to Creative Courage Chats. It's been a long time. This is kind of my first. I'm still kind of learning the equipment and kind of getting into it here. Don't have anybody to interview today. I plan on interviewing some creatives in the future, but I'm kind of again testing out this equipment and seeing how it works, and hopefully it sounds good. And you know, I used to videotape. I used to do them with Zoom and throw them on YouTube. But I think that we're just going to go audio on these going further, because then I can actually speak to people that aren't also that aren't in my city, you know, via the phone, and record that using this equipment stuff. So anyway, like I said, this is new to me, this new equipment here and everything. So anyway, going further, I'd like to talk a little bit about what I'm going to be talking about on this podcast. It's basically the same topic. If you know me, you know it's probably talking about creativity. And the topic of creativity, I call it Creative Courage, is a kind of my platform that I've kind of developed over the many, many years. I wrote a book about it called Creative Courage with Alex Raffi. I've done workshops. And the workshops I've done have been for adults, college-age students, elementary school kids, and even kindergartners. And, you know, the kindergartners get a different talk, of course. They something a bit more fun for them, instead of listening to all the boring stuff that I would talk about in terms of the nature of creativity. What it is basically with the kids, and this is something that's very simple that anybody could do, is I kind of have them do something that they already know in class. They're learning their numbers and their letters, and I take a number and a letter, and I have them change it on the chalkboard or on a piece of paper, start with a number 2, and then add elements to it to maybe make it into a snake that's coming out of a basket. Or I take a 5 and I build the head of a lion out of a number 5. And a lot of these examples I've got on video on YouTube, on my YouTube channel. You just look me up, Alex Raffi, on YouTube, and you could probably come across some of the videos in there. So it's a fun way for them to explore and express themselves, and that is kind of the point of the creative process. Is, you know, it's fun, but it's also important, and it has the result. The fun offers a result more than just entertainment, more than just, you know, the dopamine that kind of starts rushing through you when you start having fun with something. There is growth happening every time you're doing something creative. There are connections being made in your mind, and these connections make your thought processes stronger and allow you to develop a better idea of how to solve problems, create solutions, making connections, all these things. The core, I'm going to kind of go through what I normally talk about in my workshop, and I'm just going to kind of go through some of the elements that I discuss. I started off talking about common barriers in creativity. And of course, the main barrier that we have in our creative process is fear, hence the name Creative Courage. And the beginning of the understanding of how fear keeps us, aside from the obvious, keeps us from moving forward and taking chances. Creativity requires risk tolerance, or requires an ability to take a chance with concepts and ideas. There's a belief in that creativity is only about art, and this is something that I think is important to understand. That sure, artists tend to be creative, obviously, and creative people tend to be artists, but we all are creative in some way. And the way I like to kind of describe it is, in essence, creativity is maybe taking a horse and taking a bird and combining them, and then you turn that into a Pegasus, right? You take two things that are normally not, you know, seen, they're different, totally different things, and you bring them together and create a whole new thing. That's the process of creativity. We're taking concepts and ideas, we're taking paint, or we're taking movement in dance, or whatever we're doing with sounds and music, and we're expressing something. So you take these sounds and you put them in this particular form and order, and it expresses sadness or hope or happiness. And creativity is taking things and tokens, in essence, and bringing them together and utilizing them and turning them into something else. Now, what other aspect of life do you take two different elements, put them together, and come up with a solution? Well, in pretty much any problem solving, anybody that's a problem solver does this. Attorneys do this. Doctors do this. They take different elements, they take those into consideration, and then they bring them together, see how they work together, and they come up with a solution based on the melding of those two concepts, or multiple concepts. Sometimes it's three or four, and they're bringing them together, and they're coming up with a solution, and a direction to go in. So that, in essence, is how creativity and problem solving, to me, are using the same tools in our mind to establish a result. And if that's the case, people that say they're not creative, I tend to like to tell them, well, do you solve problems in your life? And of course the answer is yes, every day. You have things that you're solving, problems that you're solving. Well, the process of solving a problem is the same process of creativity. So people who are creative are good problem solvers. People who are good problem solvers, you know, may not be creative, but that's only because they're not used to the tools that maybe they're thinking of. You know, maybe they're not used to colors and using a brush, or they're not used to how chords are built in a guitar. But if they were shown and they took the time to do it, they might actually be pretty good at it. Because your mind is a problem-solving machine, and those new elements, you would be able to utilize them and move them forward. My goal is to try to encourage people to see the value of creativity in terms of how to improve all elements of your life, whether they be communication between your friends and family or coworkers, in the way you process your work. Maybe you're at a job that you're miserable at. Well, you know, it's possible that sometimes you need to be able to make things better, make things more interesting. And sometimes you change your perspective on a thing that you're working on, and it improves it and it makes it better. Well, I'm in the library. That's where this equipment is. And so you can hear some kids in the background, so I apologize for that. But anyway, regardless, So let's go ahead and take a look. And there's something I like to share in terms of some interesting things that I talk about in my workshop. If anybody's seen Michelangelo's work in photos, or actually physically been there in the Sistine Chapel and seen the artwork and the frescoes all over the walls and everything, and the main one that everybody sees is the famous one where God is fingers reaching out to Adam, and Adam's reaching out his finger and they touch. And that is supposed to depict God granting a soul to Adam. And it's interesting because Michelangelo was asked to depict this in a painting. Well, he had a different point of view, different from the church. So he put in his own perceptions on that particular painting. Now, I know we're not a visual medium right now. I'm doing this as an audio, so if you'd wanted to go into Google and look up that painting and take a look at it. If you look at the painting of God in that painting, you can see that his cloak is in the shape of a brain, like a side view of a brain. Michelangelo did this on purpose because in his mind, God did not grant us with a soul, he granted us with our minds. And that's what the gift was from a higher power, is this ability to use our mind to develop and grow. I like that. I think that that's important, to think of this as your gift, your that gray squishy thing between your ears. It's almost like a superhero that's your friend and that you have with you all the time, and you don't really utilize or take advantage of it as much as you can. And I think that's important to kind of to take that into consideration. So like I said, creative people are found everywhere. They're doctors, hairdressers, there's police officers. These people are creative because they solve problems on a regular basis, teachers especially. They have to be nimble about how they approach things and nimble about how they deal with their situations that they have on a regular basis. And they take everything into consideration. Their training, obviously, but also elements within the class and understanding the kids that you're talking to. She knows their personalities and knows what she has to do or he has to do in to get the point across to the kids that they're trying to teach. And these are elements, again, of you and understanding your environment and being able to utilize these tokens. You know, a token is a personality, is a person near you. It's the room. It's the mood of the day. All these things are tokens that we take into consideration and we manipulate and come up with an idea or a solution going forward with it. Sir Ken Robbins, who's been a champion for creativity for a long time, he did this famous TED Talk, I think, and where he talked about creativity. It's fantastic if you haven't heard it. Look up Sir Ken Robinson on YouTube and see if take a look at that YouTube video. It's probably the one that's got the most views on it. But he said, imagination is the source of every form of human achievement. And it's the one thing that I believe we are systematically jeopardizing in the way we educate our children and ourselves. This is not a critique of teachers. This is a critique of, to be honest, sometimes the school system and not understanding the power of the creative process. Now, the arts is important to keep in schools, not because it's about painting and it's about finger painting and it's about pen and ink drawings and how is that relevant? You know, we need to teach the core curriculum. Well, education should be about empowerment as well. And the easiest way to empower someone is to give them an environment or a place where they could actually surprise themselves. There's very few things in life that you can do where you can say, oh, wow, I didn't realize I could do that, or I didn't realize I was that good at that. It's in sports, that's a big element, which is important. Sports in school is very important, PE, because it challenges people. It puts people in situations where they have to be challenged and force themselves to do something that they may not normally do. And then they surprise themselves with their abilities, or at least now they know what their limitation is, which is also very important, because then they can make a choice. Once you establish your limitation, you see it, you understand it, and then you get a choice. You're either going to try to get better, or you're going to be satisfied with what you look with what you're doing, and then move on. Regardless of what decision you make, it's good to at least have the data. So the arts in school does more than just teach people the basics of art. Art in school allows people to put themselves in a situation where it's 100% them who's being involved. It's their viewpoint. It's their expression in the artwork they're doing. Even if it's an assignment, they are actually making a choice to do whatever it is that they're going to do on the project. And then they start to learn as they go. Anybody that's ever done any art on a regular basis discovers something almost every single piece they do. They go, oh, this is interesting. Oh, this is an interesting way to go. Oh, I'm going to experiment with this. Oh, that color blends really well with this. This particular style is something that I want to play around with and start developing. These are all things that are really important, not just for the art you're working on, but for the building of your own self-worth and self-understanding. There's so few things in life that actually help us to learn about ourselves. And the arts is something that is really powerful in terms of trying to do this. Throughout life, you can grow old and still not understand who you are 100%. You know what you like, you know what you don't like, you know how things make you feel. But do you know why? Do you know why you feel the way you feel about that thing? Do you know why it is? And that why is something that we should be curious about. All of us should be curious about the why, you know, where we are moved by a poem or a scene in a film. And it's good to take a moment and step back and take into consideration why it is that moved you so much. Why did you tear up? Or why did that thing make you angry? You know, is it obvious why it made you angry, or is maybe there's something else? You know, taking that moment to really do that is really important. Once you start learning more about who you are and why things make you feel the way you do, it makes you more confident and more willing to take chances and create better solutions because you're going to take risks. And when you take risks, you start to reduce the amount of fear you feel in confrontation of things, because you start to understand more about what your capacity is and your capabilities are. And when we do know that, when we do know our capacities and our capabilities, we can actually make an effort and actually make an effort to build on that and to understand that a bit better. To understand that the brain, the human brain, is much more powerful than we give it credit for. And we don't utilize it much at all, as much as we can or should, and we may not even know how yet to really utilize it to its full potential, but it's definitely got more potential than is normally being used. And one way I like to kind of illustrate this is by simply talking about dreams. All of us have had them, you know, and if you really think about a dream, what is going on? I mean, you're asleep and your mind is telling you a story. And you're not really sure what the outcome of the story is, but you're the one who's telling yourself the story, right? There's nobody outside of you telling the story. So your mind is telling you a story, and you're walking through the situation or living through this situation, and you're being surprised by the things you're seeing, even scared by the things you're seeing. Now, how is that possible? You know, how is that possible for you to be writing a story while experience the same story that you're writing for yourself? And then not only that, you're supplying all the characters in the story. You're supplying all the elements, the scenes in the story, all the action, all the plot twists. They're all you. Yet you are still sitting in the audience watching it in real time. That's a lot going on. And one way I like to kind of talk about it and describe it is because there is a dualism to the way our mind works. And it's mainly the way I like to look at it is, think of it as your conscious mind, which is what we're using right now. And as you're sitting here listening to this, you're using that because you're awake. And when we're awake, we're using our conscious mind. But it's only used when we're awake. When we're asleep, it's not being used anymore. The other side of it is your subconscious mind. Now, your subconscious mind is never asleep. It is always working. It is always there and always available to you. So, what is the purpose of the subconscious and the conscious mind? Well, the conscious mind is the worker. The conscious mind is what you are making your choices with. It's where you weigh your options. It's where you're making your choices and your decisions and everything. But your subconscious is basically a data store. And you maybe make a choice one day. You decide, you know what? I want to play guitar. And you decide that playing guitar is a value to you. And once you establish a value, something that you decide you're going to care about, it switches off something in your subconscious to where now it starts paying attention to guitar things. So now you'll maybe start listening to some guitar already because you're interested in doing it. And when you're playing, you're practicing your guitar. That's all doing conscious mind stuff. But when you're just driving in your car and you're not even thinking about playing guitar, you're listening to music. Well, the guitar that's being played in the song that you're listening to is being downloaded into your subconscious. When you walk by a store and there's a guitar in the window, the visual of that guitar gets stored in your subconscious. All these things that are guitar-y are now being gathered and collected in your subconscious. And what happens when you sit down and start working on the guitar or start working on your craft or writing a song or doing whatever, all of those guitar moments, those tokens of guitars that are sitting in your subconscious, start to get doled out to you. Not in any particular order. Sometimes they're just kind of tossed out to you. And that's where your inspiration comes from. We talk about, you know, I get inspired by looking at a thing. Well, you don't really get inspired by exterior stimulation. What happens is maybe the exterior ignites something that's already inside you, in your subconscious, and that's where the inspiration comes. Everything that inspires us is already in us, in our subconscious, stored away. It's a value that you've decided throughout your life that is important to you, that now is stored. And whenever you need something be inspired by something, your subconscious then starts to activate, and that bubbles up, and then it offers it up, almost like tossing it over a fence to you from the subconscious side of the brain. It almost tosses this thing over to you. And a lot of times you don't know exactly what it means, but it is there for you to start utilizing, and it takes the form of, like I said, a token of this thing. And now it becomes one of the elements. It becomes the horse to the bird that turns into the Pegasus. That horse is one of the tokens that you got in your subconscious that was doled out to you. The bird was another one, and you putting them together is the process that you go through. So what does this all mean? It means that if you are curious about something, you need to explore it as much as possible. That's why traveling is important, because you start to notice and see things that are not familiar to you. And when you start doing that, you start making choices on whether you value the thing or not. You know, you see a sunset, a beautiful sunset, well, that sticks with you for the rest of your life. And every sunset that you see afterwards is connected to the first one you ever saw. And those become part of who you are and part of what value systems you have and what you draw from when you start thinking maybe of the person you were with that you're in love with when you're watching a sunset together. Suddenly, now all sunsets maybe remind you of that person. It's because that stuff was stored. It was a value. You decided it was a value, so it was branded into your subconscious. And now every time you see it, the feelings you felt get thrown up over the wall to you. That's why we feel it. That's why we feel these things. So your subconscious is a powerful, powerful part of your mind. And we can't control the subconscious. It's important to understand there's nothing, you can't reach into it and pull something out. You can't control it. All you can do is program it. And you program it by deciding what you value and then putting yourself in situations where the thing you value is exposed to you. So, you know, anything, even going to the library and getting a book on whatever it is that you're interested in, that starts building up your subconscious in a way that you'll be able to draw from in the future. So this is, all of this kind of is leading towards education in how, if this is the way the mind works, a child's mind, a young person's mind, is very, very powerful and hungry for getting data into that subconscious. And so it's our duty to help them explore and see new things and start to make these choices on their own, start building up that library in their subconscious full of things, not putting things in their mind, allowing them to make the choices and see the opportunities and learn new things, exploring things. And that is the true nature of teachers. That's all they want to do from day one. They want to expose kids to things that inspire them and that will make them want to learn. That's something that is sometimes missed by school systems, but not by teachers, but school systems, is making kids, putting them in a situation where they want to learn, and then showing them how to learn. That's a big part of it too, instead of throwing them to the wolves and trying to hope that they're going to eventually grasp the thing. I think that it's required to inspire and expose them to things that maybe they didn't realize were valuable. And it's happened a lot of times to me. I've had the good fortune of being allowed to speak about creativity to a lot of young people. And I know the topic is kind of an easy one because they go, oh, I get to be creative. This will be a fun class. This isn't something hard. But usually the lesson in the class that I'm trying to teach is, guess what? History, you know, you may not like it, but history is full of things that you can draw from and learn from. You can learn all the great things we did and all the mistakes we made, and you can learn from that. And you can keep those lessons in your subconscious and then utilize them later, and they'll make you a better problem solver, make you better creative, make you a better communicator, And these are all things that are very important. Anyway, so this is the topic that I like to talk about. I'm going to go ahead and kind of wrap it up a little bit here. I could talk about this topic for a long time, but I want to be able to maybe do it with some other people and invite people to, you know, join me in this conversation. So I'm going to, what I'd like to do is I'd like to, anybody that's interested in maybe just having a discussion about creativity, email me at ARAFFI, F as in Frank, F as in Frank, I as in independent, ARAFFI for Alex Raffi at mac.com, mac.com. Put in the subject line, put podcast, and then tell me a little bit about you and why you'd like to talk to me and what topics you'd like to talk to me about in terms of creativity. And then we can go ahead and get into the discussion and see if we can have some fun. If you go to my Creative Courage chats and you look it up on podcasts, I've got about 60 interviews I've already done. And you can go through and listen to some of my interviews that I did years ago that I like a lot. I like them all a lot. There's always something interesting in all of them. And I've talked to all sorts of people. I've talked to business owners. I've talked to police. I talk to artists and teachers and all sorts of people in all sorts of careers. And it's really interesting conversation when we start talking about how they utilize their creativity in their everyday life. Anyway, so you can learn more about me and learn more about my podcast and my book and what I love, this topic that I love to talk about, at my website, alexraffi.com. And anyway, until next time, you know, let's see if we can get to talking about something interesting and learn a little bit more about each other and go from there. Thanks a lot.